This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Cincinnati and Hamilton County Park Systems, the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden, Boone County Arboretum, the Civic Garden Center, Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum. Our region is blessed with a wealth of public gardens, parks, woods, and green spaces. Here to discuss Cincinnati's rich public horticultural heritage are Jennifer Harton with the Cincinnati Parks Explore Nature Program, Brian Hines, Horticulture Supervisor at Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum, and Scott Berline, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Horticulturist and Chairman of the Taking Root Campaign. So what are your favorite public gardens? Where do you like to go to just relax and enjoy the trees and plants? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jennifer, Brian, and Scott, thank you for being here today.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Scott, Taking Root, how are things going with the campaign?
Things are good. A couple of things happening. We've updated the registration. So we're showing now over 150,000 trees registered. So it's still a far cry to 2 million. But we know there's a lot of trees getting planted that still aren't registered. So if you're out there and you've planted a tree since 2013,
We'll go back that far. That'll get us to 2 million real quick.
That helps. Yeah, that would help a lot. Get on our website, takingroot.info, register your trees. We're a finalist for a big Impact 100 grant.
Okay.
We'll know if we get that in September, but a great grant for an educational program we're putting together. And some other things happening, real exciting.
And you said 150,000. We're trying to hit 2 million by 2020. We still got plenty of time.
We have time, and this
can be done.
Right. And there's a lot of people, a lot of groups out there planting a lot of trees. So a big part of the equation is getting registration down. So we're promoting that as much as we can. And we actually have a volunteer corps now that's starting to work on registering trees. So they're making calls to landscapers and nurseries and big park districts and others to find out what is getting planted and make sure they get registered.
Now, what are the benefits of doing this, Scott?
Well, the benefits just really are to raise awareness of the importance and value of trees. Part of that is, of course, the loss of trees we're facing right now from ash borer and other things. And to fight that by getting more trees in the ground, making people aware of the many, many things that trees do for us.
Now, what kinds of trees do you suggest that people plant? Could it be anything?
Anything except a calorie pear really is what we're accepting on the registration page. And the reason for the calorie pear not being counted is with the invasiveness issue, we've determined that planting a Bradford pear or a calorie pear is doing actually more harm than good for the local environment. So native trees, exotic trees when they're not invasive, mostly any tree that goes in the ground is doing benefit.
And again, what's the website for being involved in this?
Takingroot.info.
Takingroot.info. And you can find a link to that at the WVXU website as well. And Scott, when it comes to the history of Cincinnati, our area's rich horticultural heritage, where do you start with that? I mean, this is a pretty fantastic area, isn't it?
It's incredibly fascinating. I first put the program together. I always enjoy history. I love Cincinnati. But the Perennial Plant Association was holding their Eastern Region meeting here last year, and it got handed to me to do a talk on the history of horticulture in the region. And so I started working on it, and the more I got involved and the more I read, the more interesting it became. It goes back to Longworth and his Catawba grapes, in the early part of the 1800s. a little bit of involvement with the beer barons from the 1830s through Prohibition, the darkest period of American history. And, the park district has such a great history and great parks, fantastic. The Spring Grove, of course, with Adolf Strauch in the mid-1840s or 1850s. Not only did Adolf Strauch more or less design Spring Grove and make it laid out the plans for it to become this gem that it is now, but he also had a lot of influence on Cincinnati parks. The Cincinnati Zoo was sort of begun partly with his design. So we owe a lot of credit to him. And by the way, this is all going to be talked about Tuesday night at the Cincinnati Zoo. We're doing a program called the Public Garden, Gardens of Cincinnati Expo, which will have this program, 45-minute PowerPoint of the history of Cincinnati horticulture. And then that's followed by 10-minute updates, basically, from the major institutions that are going to tell us what their current status is and what their future plans are. So this is that should be a really great night for people interested in gardening in Cincinnati or just need to get out for a nice date.
Well, you've done this presentation before, correct?
I did it one time at the Perennial Plant Association and for a couple of garden clubs, but this is the first time it's generally open to the public.
Well, how was it received when you first did it?
Oh, people love it. Absolutely love it. The people from out of town for the Perennial Plant Association really got excited about it. And then the garden clubs I've given it to, and garden clubs, frankly, tend to be older people. They got so engaged with it and just had their own anecdotes and stories to add. It's been really, really, really cool.
Why do you think the Cincinnati area ended up with such a wealth of all these public gardens and woods and green spaces? Is there something you can pinpoint?
Well, partly Adolf Strauch, I think, had a lot to do with it. And the fact that Cincinnati, you know, through the mid-1800s into the late 1800s was a very prosperous city. So there was extra money to put aside for things like parks. In fact, the park district was kind of laid out with special, you know, design purposes with where the parks were placed. So there's money for parks. There's money for other things that we enjoy today that a lot of cities our size don't have, you know, the symphony, for instance, or opera or different things like that.
And how do you think Cincinnati compares to other cities when it comes to its public parks and gardens and green spaces?
I think Cincinnati parks are one of the absolute leading park districts in the country,
and
without
a
doubt.
I can speak to that.
You can
also
testify to that, Jennifer, sure.
Well, for many years running, Cincinnati Parks has been number one. We're recommended by the Trust for Public Lands, and we're always rated in the top 10 in the country of top parks, top city urban parks.
Now, when we're talking about Cincinnati Parks, how many parks is it? How many acres are we talking about?
We have about 5,000 acres of parks. I don't know the number of them, but we've got parks in the west, east, central, and of course our new parks down on the riverfront, which I really have to encourage everybody to go down there because they're just an incredible addition to our city.
Now, Jennifer, have any public parks been created during the last decade besides Smale? Is that the most recent one?
That's the most recent one. Before that was the International Friendship Park, which is actually at the far east end of the riverbanks. So there's about a mile and a half of parks now down on our riverfront.
So how did Cincinnati Parks get its start?
Well, Cincinnati Parks started, we always use the date of 1907, and that's when our Board of Park Commissioners and the city of Cincinnati decided to create the Board of Park Commissioners, and we started having land donated, you know, like Ault Park was donated by Levi Ault, and as Scott was saying, Strauch was asked to design our park system. So,
as Scott was saying, people seem to be willing to fund the park systems in this area. Is that the case?
Yeah, we have an incredible partnership with public and private funding. And our public funding is local, it's state and federal funding. And then we have a lot of people that just really love our parks. So we do have a lot of private funding. We've had a lot of private funding that has gone into the new park down on the waterfront. But we have a rich history of people funding our parks. So we have a lot of private endowments that fund sometimes just specific parks, or sometimes the funding is a private fund that will help us with parks throughout the city.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Tell us what your favorite public garden, your favorite park, your favorite place is to go to just relax and enjoy the trees and the flowers and the plants. And Scott, you know, we have both city-owned and we have a really a very impressive county-owned park system. in our area.
Yeah, very nice county park system. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention how great a partner Great Parks of Hamilton County has been for taking root. Really, I mean, they have done the lion's share of tree planting and continue with plans to do so in the future. But even when it comes to horticulture, which is ornamental gardening, you look at something like Glenwood Gardens, which is out, I guess, in Woodlawn area. That is just a fantastically well done park that I think a lot of people in the area still don't really know about. It's just a beautiful design, well planted, great plant choices. Very interesting place.
Yeah, Glenwood Gardens would be on my favorites list. If you were going to ask me what's my favorite green space, my favorite park in the area, it is beautiful. And it's interesting because it's got a nice mix of things that have been planted there, but also there's a lot of natural things that are growing in the park. It's just absolutely beautiful to walk through there. It was originally a farm, right?
It was a farm. It was donated to the county to develop as a park. And it's large. They've got children's gardens. They've got beautiful ornamental gardens. But then you can also go for a nice walk through a well-appointed arboretum-type area on to go see wetlands with American lotus growing.
Wildflowers growing.
Prairies. It's all there. It's just a fantastic, beautiful place.
Yeah, and if you like to walk, the trails are great. I mean,
they really are.
There's plenty of space to walk there. And Brian, you seem like you're familiar with Glenwood Gardens.
Yes, we actually had an educational meeting out there this Monday. Unfortunately, the storm that rolled in called us short a little bit on that with Ohio State Extension. But it was a fantastic trip out there for the time we were there. The perennial and shrub beds are very large, big sweeps of color, and just really intelligent choices. We were looking at prairie dock and some other plants that aren't necessarily that common to see in some of our landscapes, and just really outstanding use of those in the right areas there.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us this afternoon. And you know something, a lot of people, do you think a lot of people don't realize that with Spring Grove, that it's not just a cemetery, it's also an arboretum? I kind of get the impression people don't realize all the work you put into keeping that place looking so beautiful.
It's a very common thing to talk to someone and it's their first time in there and they had no idea the park-like setting, the plantings that we have, the beauty of the property. From Strauch's original design with the layout of the roads, the curving aspect of that, the plantings, you know, they really wanted you to be able to lose yourself in the landscape. And it was always intended to be more of a park. You know, it was never intended to be a cemetery where someone would be and sort of feel like they had stepped into an Edgar Allan Poe story. It was always meant to feel more like a park setting. We have 15 lakes in the cemetery, which at last we checked with our historian, Phil Nuxall. That was, to best he could check, the most lakes in any cemetery in the world. So they're all man-made lakes in there that we've had constructed over the years. Lots of wildlife in the cemetery. It's very common to see all manner of waterfowl and deer and foxes, a lot of fox this year. So it really is a wonderful place to come and visit. We have everything open to the public in terms of walking or coming in to have lunch, riding a bike. You know, we just everything sort of seamlessly works with the fact that we are a cemetery as well. But we encourage all of that activity. And you know, last night we had a concert with Bluestone Ivory in the Rose Garden area and. Just a really wonderful use of the property.
Yeah, and I, you know, if you have two times a year at all to just get away and go down and spend a few hours at Spring Grove, the first week of April when the magnolias and the cherries are in bloom, the place is Disneyland and Christmas all at the same time. It is as enchanting as you can imagine. And, of course, in the fall color, the trees that they have down there are just, you know, many and big and old and beautiful. How many champion trees do you have down there?
So we just were updated this year from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. We are now 27 Ohio champion trees, which means they are the largest, measured to be the largest of their species in all of Ohio. 27.
Wow. Well, we will continue our conversation about Cincinnati green spaces, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Jennifer Harton with the Cincinnati Parks Explore Nature Program, Brian Hines, Horticulture Supervisor at Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum, and Scott Berline, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Horticulturist and Chairman of the Taking Root Campaign. Call and tell us about your favorite public gardens and parks at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Brian, I thought that was interesting because I always thought with Spring Grove, it would have been cemetery first and arboretum second. But it is indeed the other way around.
It's really from the very beginning, joined together and active parts both ways. Our founding fathers, if you will, were the Cincinnati Men's Horticultural Society. Our first president, Robert Buchanan, president of the cemetery, was a member of that organization. And they've just always looked to bring in wonderful ornamentals from all over the country and all over the world. So of the 733 acres of the property, about 400 are developed, and a mix of native and non-native species, floral beds and perennial sweeps. And as Scott mentioned, just a tremendous amount of large, old, beautiful trees. Our oldest tree is a 400-year-old white oak in the center of the property.
How old?
400.
400 years. Wow.
One of the more interesting things I found when I was doing research for the history talk is, well, first of all, Spring Grove's only had 8 presidents in its entire span. So everybody that becomes president stays so until they die. They never retired until Tom Smith did a few years ago. But almost every one of them either was a horticulturist or was heavily involved in horticulture in the area with the Cincinnati Horticulture Society or with teaching horticulture at UC. So even from the president down, horticulture has always played a super important role at Spring Grove.
Scott, what makes an arboretum an arboretum? How do you define arboretum?
Oh, that's a good one.
Or Brian.
Yeah.
Or Jennifer, whoever wants to jump on that one.
Well, an arboretum would be a collection of trees.
Okay.
There are associations where you can officially register as an arboretum at various levels even. I think you're level 3.
Currently, through it's the Morton Arboretum's accreditation. Spring Grove is a level 3 out of 4 categories in their accreditation process. We're working towards level 4. A lot of what we need to do has to do with an additional staff member that will be more of a curatorial position to take care of the collection, and really is in its own way a museum without walls. You're currently we have over 1,300 labeled species and cultivars of trees and shrubs, and then ornamental grasses and perennials around the landscape of Spring Grove. So we don't currently have a lot going on in the way of research in our property. We don't have the scientific positions, but a great collection of trees.
And I would be remiss. Chris Stone would personally just never be friends with me again if I didn't mention that Boone County Arboretum over in Hebron is a level 4. That's the highest category of arboretum you can get. And most people probably in the area don't know they exist. They're pretty new, I think 15, maybe 20 years old, which is really cool for somebody to be starting new arboretums these days. And a great facility it is over there. So people should try to get over there and check that out.
Jennifer, when it comes to, I would think the parks are a great place to go if you're looking for ideas about it. You know, how do I landscape? How do I garden? What are some neat ideas for designing a garden and putting in flowers? It's a lot of wonderful opportunities, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, when you talk about arboretums, I think that's one function that they serve is to see how these shrubs and trees how they grow in our area. So something that might grow in Florida may not grow here. So our arboretums, and we also have one, it's the Mount Airy Arboretum in Mount Airy Forest. And so you can go to those different gardens in the arboretum and see how some of the plants will grow in our area. So, yeah, if you want to go and start designing, I would recommend first going out and checking out some of the beautiful gardens that we have in the city of Cincinnati and seeing what's appealing to you, and then start with color, texture. But I think the first thing you have to do is, you know, really see what is appealing to you.
Do some exploration.
Yeah.
Is it safe to assume that the trees and the plants that are used in the parks are good for my yard? They're hardy and appropriate for our region?
Well, not always. Sometimes you have to baby them, you know, like, for example, rhododendrons and azaleas, they like more of an acidic soil and they like shade. So you have to know some of the qualities that they like, the environment they like to live in. But you can, but for the most part, like in arboretums, you can see how they do in our areas.
513-419-7100 to join our conversation. And Jennifer, we had a question from Fred in Lower Price Hill. He wanted some information on Lytle Park and what's going on there.
Yeah, so right now Lytle Park is going through a renovation, and a lot of people don't know that Lytle sits on top of the Lytle Tunnel, which is it's 75, which when you come down 75, you go through the Lytle Tunnel before you hit Fort Washington Way. So that park sits on top of Lytle Tunnel, and in order to bring the tunnel up to code for ventilation, they've had to redo the tunnel. And so in the process of doing that, they've had to tear out part of the park. But our department has worked with private funding and the Department of Transportation to create a new design. And that'll be starting to install that in 2016.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Leo in Mount Healthy. Hi, Leo.
Hi there. Are you there?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I got to vote for Smoky Acres at Taft and Redding.
Okay. Why do you like it?
Well, it's right in the middle of the city, and I'm a courier, so whenever I make deliveries, if I need a place to decompress, there's always like a couple parking spaces in there. And I just pull back in there and just relax. it's right in the middle of all kinds of commotion and chaos. And you can just pull in there and it's great.
Yeah, thanks, Leo.
Leo, that's we usually call that Sooty Acres. Did you hear it called Smoky Acres from a different source?
Yeah. I misspoke on that.
Okay.
and I think it had some kind of connection with the Houck family.
That's correct. The house that's there, the Houcks owned. They actually own the house right behind it, called the Gibson House. We call it the Gibson House now. But that property was donated to Cincinnati Parks. I'm not sure which year, but I actually used to maintain it when I was a horticulturist in the field, and it is a beautiful collection of magnolias down there. We used to have an area where there's wildflowers. So it is a beautiful little oasis right in the middle of a very hectic city.
Thanks for the call, Leo. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and the Civic Garden Center is right there also, that a great institution for horticulture in the city. And also Bennett Dowling from the Civic Garden Center will be one of the speakers Tuesday night at the expo.
Hey, Brian, for the people who do know about Spring Grove and all the natural beauty in there, do you find that people are going there for the same reasons Leo goes in to relax and to chill out?
Yes, definitely. We see a lot of familiar faces each day. A lot of folks will come in for the daily walk or bicycle ride, lunch by one of the ponds. There's a lot of great interactions with the public using the space that way.
Jennifer, it's Sooty Park is what is the actual name. Is that considered a small park or what?
It's probably just about an acre and a half maybe. It's Sooty Acres is Sooty the Acre. Affectionate name for it. It's really called the Houck Botanic Gardens.
Mm-hmm. But are there a lot of these smaller type parks that make up the city park system?
Yeah, we have tiny little parks, as you know, just a little corner like Clark's Point, which is in O'Brienville, one of our smallest parks. And then we have huge parks like Mount Airy Forest, which is 1,500 acres of green space.
And is that the biggest one in the Cincinnati park system?
Yes. Okay. It used to be the biggest urban park in the United States, but I don't think that's true anymore. But I'm not sure what the statistic is on that.
Let's talk with Michael. Good afternoon, Michael. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you. I was lucky enough to, I'm a native, and I was lucky enough to grow up in the county park system with Ranger Wells or Naturalist Wells when I was a kid. And he introduced us to the woods, Winton Woods in particular, took us around a lot whenever we went and banged on his door. But within the city itself, you've been talking about Spring Grove, first of all, is a gem that I'm lucky enough to be able to talk to visitors to the city on a regular basis, and I keep one of their folders in my space all the time. I hand them out to people and recommend it. I mean, if you're in Cincinnati for a few hours on a Sunday afternoon, there's the Taft. There's a number of places that you can visit. But Spring Grove is really easy and really fast. You can do it as you're driving out of Cincinnati. But with respect to using the parks as a planning, HALC or the Civic Garden Center there, scale-wise, works really well if you're looking for looking at plantings with respect to a house. Spring Grove can be a little overwhelming, although they do have a wonderful area, that specimen area, down below, which Brian can tell you more about. But it's also a great place, as are all the parks that have plantings, and the Arboretum in particular, to see how plants mature. We can oftentimes plant something in our yard and have no idea just how big it's going to get at some point. So visiting the parks can tell you a lot about how you might use plants. But Spring Grove is a gem. Eden Park is a gem. We are very, very lucky. I would think that we were just talking about it's the biggest. Mount Airy has all these little pieces that are not directly connected to it over on the western side there, but I think are part of it, and it probably has the ability to remain the largest in the city, in the country, if they wanted to. But I just wanted to say they're wonderful, and Spring Grove in particular is year-round. I think they just did the other night a night walk, a full moon walk. I may have missed
Is that right, Brian?
That was, yes, recent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and I think we actually, it was clear.
So it was a good night to take this walk.
I missed it. But anyway, I just wanted to recommend them, and thank you for bringing up all of it.
You're welcome, Michael. Thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I think the value of using parks and gardens, public gardens, for, you know, learning for your own home garden is vastly underutilized. Spring Grove, you can go see what almost any tree will do in at maturity there. Boone County Arboretum is designed as a landscape arboretum to show homeowners what can be used for their gardens. And the zoo, I think we haven't talked about the zoo very much, but a fantastic botanical garden with a lot of labeled plants for people to use to learn, you know, what works at home, especially with our annuals, 250 varieties or more of annuals that are all labeled out there for people to use, a lot of perennials, trees and shrubs.
It can be a very daunting thing, you know, with the homeowner to look at, you know, what living thing am I going to try here? How can I keep this alive? And at all of our places, you know, we have wonderful employees, but we need plants that are user friendly in most of our spaces. So, you know, the things that we grow should be very, very proven for the area for the most part. We do have specialty spots, as Jennifer mentioned, with rhododendrons and things like that. But most things are designed to perform well for us. And, you know, it's just a lot safer to look at the parks, to look at the zoo, to look at Spring Grove and see what the plants do on their own versus just jumping on line. Oh, that grows 3 feet by 3 feet. And it's amazing how many plants grow 3 feet by 3 feet or 5 feet by 5 feet. They don't always know that they're supposed to stop then, though.
And use the staff. You know, the horticulturists at these places are fantastic. And most times they're very, very lonely. And and they're more than happy to talk to you about plants if you see them. And then all of us, Spring Grove, the city parks, Boone County Arboretum, the zoo, we all do educational programs that people can take advantage of for free or very inexpensive and really get some of the best gardening advice or education out there.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Zad in Mount Auburn. Good afternoon.
Hi there. How's everybody doing today?
Well, we're doing great.
Great.
Lovely. I just had two things, really. One, on a dog walk yesterday, I found Jackson Hill Park in the Mount Auburn area at the end of Dorchester.
Yes.
It gives you not one, but two really great views of the city. If anybody's not checked this out yet, I really highly suggest it. Jackson Hill Park.
Yeah, it's a beautiful park. Yeah.
Wonderful. So you know it.
Oh, I know it. Yeah,
oh, yeah. Jennifer would know this.
Yeah, I know it. And another one you might want to check out is at the end of Ohio Avenue. It's called Bellevue Park, which is another exceptional city view.
I was hoping you would say that. One of my favorite parks.
Yeah, and it has a great shelter house, too.
Wonderful. I have one more question. Is anybody familiar with Goble Park across the river?
No.
Not me.
No. I've heard the name before, Zad, but I'm not familiar with it.
They just recently started a, I guess you could call it a land reclamation project with goats. They're clearing some pretty steep grades, some hillsides, with a herd of 10 goats. I think a guy named Gus got a grant to do it. And I'm kind of curious, actually I'm very curious about the prospects of something like that being utilized, because we all know of the burden of honeysuckle, multiflora rose, poison ivy, et cetera, and what a powerful tool goats can be in not only reclaiming the land, but returning fertility to it and getting all of the products that you get from goats. So I just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
Thank you, Zan. We appreciate it. Goats. Is that going to become a new trend for arboretum goats?
I think we had goats and sheep were our first mowing crew in the 1840s and 50s at Spring Grove. So maybe we'll have to look at bringing them back for some of the tough areas.
Are they cheaper than lawnmowers and tractors?
They're not as loud.
Oh, well, we'll take a break here and we'll continue our conversation about Cincinnati green spaces. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Here to discuss Cincinnati's rich public horticultural heritage are Jennifer Harton with the Cincinnati Parks Explore Nature Program, Brian Hines, Horticulture Supervisor at Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum, and Scott Berline, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Horticulturist and Chairman of the Taking Root Campaign. What's your favorite public garden or your favorite public park? Let us know, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org. Or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Amy in Blue Ash. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thank you.
Hey, I just have to give my 2 cents worth for all-time favorite Spring Grove. Family went there on a regular basis for things like Easter pictures because the flowers are just so spectacular in the springtime. Yet I had a really unique experience at Spring Grove. I took a course through the University of Cincinnati. It was a landscape design course, and it was given back in the potting area at the very back of Spring Grove.
Oh, okay, yes.
And then they used the entire Spring Grove Cemetery as the classroom. And so we got really great hands-on design stuff with all the elements that are there at Spring Grove. Pretty fabulous. just had to give my plug for Spring Grove. What a great place.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. We appreciate it. And that's the great thing about these spaces, the city parks, the Spring Grove, the zoo, is you can get all kinds of ideas. There are all kinds of educational resources that you can get to through these organizations.
Definitely.
Yeah. 513-419-7100. And let's talk with Colleen in Bridgetown. Hi, Colleen.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
I just wanted to reiterate, the zoo is a great place for education. I was a very beginning gardener probably about 5 years ago. My dad always grew vegetables and things like that growing up. And then when we finally had a house of our own, I wanted to do the landscape up, and I didn't really know where to start. And the zoo had, I think it was a 10-week course, and you went one night for about 2 or 3 hours every night, under $200 for the whole course. And I've sort of been off and running since then. They started with what you need for the soil to make it, you know, able to grow everything. And then which are the big trees that you need to put in first. And then which are the secondary kind of trees and shrubs and then flowers. I mean, it was just everything I ever could need for my needs. I don't think I'm ever going to be a master gardener, but it was just a fabulous course. And I'm so very thankful that I took that. And then I also wanted to put a plug in for Fernald, which a lot of people, of course, know as the place that they used to make uranium. But I sort of discovered that my then 9-year-old was a birder, a bird watcher, and that was one of the places we would go to see ducks. And there were nights that we would go out for a woodcock walk and then to go see owls and things like that. And it's just a fabulous park with wetlands, and it's nice and flat, which is always good.
Isn't it amazing, Colleen, what they've done with that place?
I
never cease to be amazed by that.
Boggling.
Considering
there. And the first time I went, I remember just growing up thinking, you know, you don't want to go there because you're going to, you know, God knows what is going to happen to you. And it's fabulous.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I remember what it looked like when I was growing up in that area, and it was horrifying, and it was a mess.
Yeah.
And now it's just such a place of great natural beauty. Thanks, Colleen. We appreciate the phone call.
Yeah, I'd like to thank her for the comments about Steve Foltz's landscape series, which is held every winter starting late January, I believe, runs for 10 weeks. Steve is my boss at the zoo, a director of horticulture, and really one of the best horticulturists in the country. Does a fantastic job. He really kind of outlines everything you need to know to get that baseline education on how to be a very good gardener. And that can be found on the zoo website to sign up for those, to register for those classes, as can all of our classes. Tuesday's Expo, you can register there. And then we have Plant Trials Day coming up, where we bring in a lot of good speakers from around the country to come and talk about horticulture. And also we have a native plants symposium coming up in November, which, again, some great speakers from around the region will be coming in to talk about a lot of great plants.
Shelby and Florence sent us an email. Her vote is for Boone County Arboretum, as well as Big Bone Lick.
Oh, yeah. Big Bone is great, too. Two great resources in northern Kentucky there. Also DeVue, and a lot of great private gardens in Covington and Newport.
Jennifer Eric and Over the Rhine emailed. He wondered if anybody knew, and I think this is probably better directed toward you, if you knew about future plans. Where we've heard about this talk of capping Fort Washington Way and creating some new park areas up there. Is that still something that is being thought about? Is that still in the works in any way, shape, or form?
I've heard that, but right now we just completed the second phase of the waterfront. The new waterfront parks, the Smale Riverfront Park. We're going to go now into the third phase, which includes a marina and capping the parking lot between the new carousel and the Paul Brown Stadium. So that's in the works now, and I'm not sure about capping Fort Washington Way, although I have heard that talk of that, but I don't think it's in the works right away.
Yeah, I have to tell you too, Jennifer, my wife and I were watching the All-Star game the other night, and they had some great shots looking down on top of a Great American Ballpark. You can see the banks. And my wife kept saying, I'm amazed by all the green space. I didn't realize all that had popped up down in the banks project. But when you saw that aerial shot, it made you realize just how much of that now is green space.
Well, there's actually two different projects down there. The banks is the development that's happened just north of Smail Riverfront Park. So those two projects happened simultaneously, but we don't think that the bank's development would have happened unless we had the park being developed there. So I think that's a lot of people get that confused because that's a lot of the economic development that happened down on the riverfront. But our park, the Cincinnati Smail Riverfront Park, was developed and it is now complete, except for like the marina and what I just talked about, capping that one garage. So that we just did our last opening last week for the Smail Riverfront Park. So it is a lot of green down there.
When you see it from the air, and that was her comment, it was like, I can't believe how much green's on the riverfront now. So it looks good.
Oh, yeah. We've reclaimed a lot of area down there. For example, the Castellini Esplanade, which is at the far west end of all that development, the Castellinis had donated, I believe it was 5 acres of land down there, which used to be where all of their fruits and vegetables used to come into the city. They used to call it the, I can't remember what they told me. But anyway, that's where a lot of that fruits and vegetables, that's where the Castellinis started their business. And it, so we right now have an area of the park. It's called the Castellini Esplanade, and we're planning on having farmer's market down there. So it's a beautiful sight.
Let's talk with Jenny in Covington. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I just had a comment. We love Washington Park in Cincinnati, but I just love all the parks for the beauty of being able to be an urban dweller and take advantage of the parks. We don't really have room for a lawn like out in the suburbs, but I feel like we can frequent the parks and other people are doing the high maintenance and work and we all fund it as taxpayers, I guess, wherever we live, but it's a great thing for urbanites, and there's more people moving back to the cities, I think, so I think we're all benefiting by that.
Yeah, the Washington Park's been a great addition to Cincinnati Parks. I think early in the program, I was asked about new parks, and Washington Park's not a new park, but it has been redesigned and redeveloped and has just brought a lot of people down to that area. And in fact, when the Cincinnati parks were first being thought of, that was their primary goal, was to have green space for people that lived in the urban areas.
But they also serve as an attraction for tourists, too, I would imagine.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's talk to Joe in Norwood. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Hey, I like, first of all, I do really like Kennedy Park in Pleasant Ridge and Kennedy Heights. I used to take a little trail down there at the lower level where the creek is, but then the stairs were taken out on the one upside. I guess hiking back there might be discouraged. But anyway, my one question that I had was about the emerald ash borer. I have I really like this tree called fringe tree, and I recently saw where the emerald ash borer was sort of migrating to that particular tree, and I had wondered if you had heard anything about that.
Okay. Thanks, Joe.
So with that, yes, we're working with a professor from Wright State and some folks from Xavier University. We have 50 sites with a different fringe tree, both the native Cynanthus virginicus and the non-native Cynanthus rotusus, the Chinese fringe tree, are both planted in Spring Grove. And it is the closest related member in the olive family to ash. So there has been a little bit, we've discovered a little bit of emerald ash borer in the plants. However, we supplied a lot of pieces of some of these shrubs to the universities for study this year, where they were going to actually take these pieces and rear out the insects, because it looked like there's just not enough stem, not enough room for the insects to mature fully. The numbers that we found in them were very low compared to similar sized ash. So I wouldn't worry too much yet. It's something that we're definitely monitoring, but the size of the plant and the way we use the plant is very different than ash. So even if we were to need to cut down some of our fringe tree, being that we use it as a large shrub, we could still maintain it just with the heavy rejuvenation pruning. Whereas if you have to cut down your 40-foot tall ash tree, you're starting over and you're going to be pretty frustrated.
You ought to put a big frown on your face.
I lost one personally in my yard. So
let's talk with Diane in Indian Hill. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
My question is, I've taken lots of photos, and so I pretty much know what I want to insert, designing a new garden. But the soil is very, very full of clay. And I've even discovered that the original owner, probably from the 60s, buried bricks.
Bad grading job, yeah.
So I am digging out a lot of the clay, and I've been putting in, you know, soil and peat moss. But after all this rain, I'm still left with mud.
Yeah, it's not good stuff.
Yeah, really thick clay mud. So I'm wondering here, what do you amend the soil with in Cincinnati? Because I moved from Massachusetts, and so I'm not used to this.
I'd rather start with clay than any other type of soil. And in some ways, clay is very good for holding nutrients, and you can work with clay and turn it into a really good soil. It probably doesn't matter so much what organic matter you add to it as long as you're adding organic matter. Don't work it when it's wet. You can really ruin the structure that way. But just work in organic matter, give it some years, and you can turn it into a really nice soil.
And by the way, we'll be doing our monthly horticulture show on the 28th of this month. So if you're interested in more gardening info, we can go more into depth at that point. Let's talk with Chaz in Over the Rhine. Hi, Chaz.
Hi, how's it going, guys?
Good, thanks.
Good. I had the fortune of taking a horticulture class with Tom Smith, and he's such a wealth of knowledge. I really valued that course class at UC. But most recently, I took a course with Braden Trout, the permaculture course, and learned about edible food forests and the different type of passive plantings that you can do. And I was kind of wondering, the way that my community garden has, it just had gooseberries in June, and the blackberries are delicious right now, and all of the fruit and nut trees that can grow in the region. And maybe if there are no plans for it, then I'm just planting an idea right now. But for edible forest gardening in Cincinnati and the region, if there were any ideas or places where we could harvest locally.
I can speak to that. I believe that Xavier University is working with the Cincinnati Park Board to develop an edible forest on Victory Parkway right across from the campus. I don't know how close they are to making that a reality, but I know that they were in discussion with that discussion.
Okay. Thanks, Chaz, for the phone call. We appreciate it. And so let me ask the three of you, and this is putting you on the spot, what's your favorite place?
Oh, you're looking at me.
I'm putting you on the spot, Jennifer.
Yeah. I have to say that I think the Alt Park Perennial Gardens are one of
beautiful.
My favorites. Dave Roberts does a wonderful job up there, and it's just a gorgeous place to go and relax. There's little spots that you can hide in, or you can be out in the sun. So it's one of my favorite parks.
But it's all good. Brian, what about you? You have a favorite green space? Spring Grove, we can understand,
there were some coworkers of mine that were like, why do you walk? Why do you stay after work? And I would tend to, you know, just do my jogging or walking after there. It's just still a wonderful place. But I do. It's like 1A and 1B because I had actually grown up. I originally wanted to be into zoology. So the zoo is very, very near and dear to my heart. And I can go and get lost in there at any time and just bug Scott mercilessly.
I'll repay the favor. I love the zoo. I love working there. Every bit of it's great. But I still love Spring Grove. That's where I did a lot of my early horticulture, gawking. It's just a fabulous place. I would like to mention one thing. A group of us have started a Facebook page called Gardens of Greater Cincinnati. Just look it up. And it does a pretty good job of kind of keeping, on the front burner in people's attentions, the different things that the public gardens are doing in the city, with regular photographs of beautiful things happening. So it's kind of fun to visit that if you have a chance.
And then your talk, Public Gardens of Cincy, that's coming up on Tuesday, July 21st,
Tuesday,
7 o'clock.
Lots of seats left, so register, and you can do that at the Cincinnati Zoo website. Go to the events page.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Jennifer Harton with the Cincinnati Parks Explore Nature Program, Brian Hines, Horticulture Supervisor at Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum, and Scott Berline, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Horticulturist and Chairman of the Taking Root Campaign. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our program are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Kevin Rawinski. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next on 91.7 WVXU. Starting with only 11 students and a staff of Three Sisters of Charity, a young priest embarked on a mission which will produce the first accredited high school for the deaf in Ohio. On the next Cincinnati edition, we'll learn more about St. Rita School for the Deaf as it celebrates its 100th anniversary. We'll also talk about programs to encourage employers to hire former offenders and give them a second chance. That's on Cincinnati Edition, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.